Hi there. So I've created a LinkedIn group called Getting in the Loop Podcast, and I would like to invite you to join. I've put the link in the show notes, and you can also find it by going to the website, of course, LinkedIn, and searching Getting in the Loop Podcast. Hi, I'm Katie Whelan, and join me each week as I talk with experts around the globe about circular economy. You'll find out what's being done to make it a reality, and if it can really solve the problems it promises. It's time for Getting in the Loop. Welcome back to the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm your host, Katie, and today I would like to take this opportunity to reflect on the past 2 years of the Getting in the Loop podcast. And I want to say thank you for being with me on this journey for the past 2 years. This episode is the 2 year celebration of the Getting in the Loop podcast. And I couldn't have done it without you. So thank you for being part of this journey. And it has been such an honor getting to know you over the last couple of years. As you probably can imagine, I have learned a lot from the people that come on the podcast and also from you and talking to you. I thought that today I would do a special solo cast to mark the 2 year anniversary of the podcast. And I would share a little bit about what I've learned over the past 2 years about circular economy. And I actually have listener Bianca Drutloff to thank for this recap, because in the, let's say, I think it was October of 2020, she invited me to give a presentation to EMA, which is the Institute of Environmental Management and Assessment. And that presentation that I made actually has kind of become the basis of this recap. Because Bianca asked me to reflect on what I've learned from implementing circular economy and talking to everyone on the podcast about circular economy. I think the question that she asked me was, what's happening out there when people try to implement it? And honestly, the first thought that I had when she asked me to do this presentation was panic. I was thinking, where do I even start and how do I summarize, at that point, 1.5 years of the podcast, and even be not just 1.5 years of the podcast, but how do I summarize the 10 or so years that I've been involved with this topic? And my mind kind of looked like one of those conspiracy maps that you might see if you're watching a detective film, you know, when the detectives are trying to trace who did it, and they've got lots of pieces of string hung up on the wall going from that picture to this picture and other pictures, and all you see when you step back is just a whole chaos of red thread all over a wall trying to make all these different connections. That was kind of how my brain was picturing it. I was thinking, oh, where do you even start, you know, with circular economy? Oh, there's so many big issues. You've got access to finance. You've got new R&D and research and innovation. And you also need to think about the customer and the user, if you want to call them that. You need to think about how you're going to influence their behavior. And so it was this mind map mess of what's happening and what are people doing and how are they implementing it? And people that I talk to week after week on the podcast have proven to me that this is possible and that this is not just a big conspiracy wall, if you may, sticking with that metaphor. It's not a conspiracy wall with lots of red things everywhere and all of these strings being attached. Yes, of course, there are interlinkages and it's a whole systemic change that's necessary. So it is complex, but there are some ways that at the end of the day, you can make it more tangible for yourself and you can actually start to make a change. And this podcast has proven this to me. The people that I talk to on the podcast each week have proven this to me. And I'm even more convinced now than when I started the podcast 2 years ago that this is something that is achievable and we can actually do it. There's a famous saying, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is one bite at a time. And I think that's the mentality that we need for circular economy. Sometimes we get overwhelmed. We look at the conspiracy board of how all of these different strings are connected and we're trying to do everything. But that's not feasible. One person can't do everything. We can only influence what we have control over. If we just start with that, that's a start. So I'm going to go through a little bit more about what I mean by this. And I'm trying to summarize what I've been learning on the podcast from people who are actually making stuff happen related to circular economy. And in particular, I was really inspired by the episode in 2020 with Ashley Morris. So this was episode 50, where Ashley talked about the circular experiment and action-oriented circular economy. And of course, we've been hearing from many people who are making things happen too. So for example, Jennifer from Loop It, we listened to her earlier this year. She's the founder of a reuse system, and they're actually making reusable cups happen in Sweden, and they're working on other packaging as well. We've heard from Ihab from Biome, episode 49, and he's been making regenerative materials, regenerative design, specifically materials that are from mycelium, and he's also been using really innovative business model strategies that draw on circular economy principles to make it happen. Going back to what Bianca asked me about what's happening out there when people try to implement circular economy, I came up with four key steps that I kind of see as the red thread in the stories that I'm hearing from people that I talk to on the podcast. And these are four key steps to taking action towards a circular economy. So the four key steps are: 1, acknowledge what you already know. 2, commit to a small scope. 3, try out different circular economy strategies. And 4, check the outcomes. So the first step that I said in terms of taking action towards a circular economy is acknowledging what you already know. I think that a lot of times we think we need to learn more before we can actually start applying something. It's kind of the maybe curse that we've had from the way that a lot of us have been taught, in that we feel like we need to do all the research and learn more before we can take the next step. And going back to Ashley's episode, Ashley Morris said that her first initial instinct was actually to go back to school and learn more about circular economy before trying anything out. She wanted to go to the UK. She wanted to come back after the UK, go back to where she's from in Australia, and then try to apply it. And her sister said, no, you already have the tools that you need to make a start. So why not just try that out first? So that's the main point behind the first step, acknowledging what you already know and thinking about how you could use that. As I have been working in circular economy over the last almost 10 years or so, I've learned actually that it helps to have a niche. It helps to be, you know, an expert in one specific thing. So maybe, for example, if you come from construction industry as a background, don't think you need to learn everything about the agri-food sector. Why not just take your skills from the construction industry and think about how you might be able to apply circular economy there? You don't need to become a generalist. I think we need more experts. We need more people who have niche and can really get down to the nitty-gritty details of circular economy in your specific industry or your specific area. So that's the first step to taking action towards a circular economy. Go against that gut instinct that you need to wait, you need to procrastinate, learn. It's a combination of procrastinate and learning when you maybe use learning more as a way to put off taking action. The second step to taking action towards a circular economy is committing to a small scope. That's something that I learned in my PhD, is that you need to set a scope. Boundaries are your friend, and you have to start somewhere. So one tangible example of this is Jennifer from Loop It, who was on the podcast episode 58. And Loop It is a reuse system, so they have a solution to be able to help companies reuse their products. It's a combination kind of product service. So you have a physical product, and then you have a digital component where you can kind of track where the products are and have the logistics all sorted for these physical products. So the concept is really big. They really want to revolutionize how products are used, and they really want to help products get used again and again and again. So they want to have reuse of products. But they didn't start kind of in that big ambition, or at least they didn't focus on how are we going to change the system completely. They actually started with focusing on one product, reusable cups. Reusable coffee cups, to be specific. So, of course, there's other types of packaging, and this system can be applied to many different products. It doesn't have to just be one reusable cup. But that's how they started off. So they built the system based kind of on that, taking their learnings, and now are in the process of scaling up and bridging out to other types of packaging, and maybe in the future, other types of products. Not just packaging products. So it's this kind of thinking where you're breaking it down to something that's really tangible. Maybe you have really high ambitions for where you're going to go in the future, but you start with something and you learn from that, and then you can grow from that as you go. Another example is Ashley, again from episode 50. With thinking about committing to a small scope, Ashley and her sister, when they started the Ocean Street experiment, they went local, and they actually had the scope be one single street. So they went really small in terms of identifying a street in their town to be the focus of the experiment. So all of the businesses that were on the street, that was their focus. What could be your street? Maybe it's not a street. Maybe it's a building. Maybe it's a coffee cup. Who knows? But think about how you could commit to a small scope. The third step to implementing and taking action towards a circular economy that I've learned from the Getting in the Loop podcast guests is trying out different circular economy strategies. I think that the best way to do this is by finding a framework. There's many different circular economy frameworks out there. the Resolve framework comes to mind. I'll put it in the show notes if you have only just heard about it now for the first time. But essentially, what you try to do is try to apply different strategies through trial and error. So for example, in Ashley's case, they looked at 6 different principles for circular economy, such as resource efficiency, reverse logistics, incentivized return, asset sharing, servitization, and innovative technology solutions. And they went through and they tried to apply these principles to the situation. And one of the examples that came about from this experiment was identifying that maybe they could rethink how they had their deliveries for the different companies. Because as Ashley says in the episode, there was one street, it was one way, and there were, I think, over 50 delivery trucks just going down the street, maybe in one day, which of course wasn't great for the aesthetics in the street. Is also not great for the environment. So they tried to rethink, like, what if we could have all of these businesses just use one delivery truck? Would that even be possible? So trying to think about how different circular economy strategies might apply to your situation, I think this should be the fun part, you know, going through trial and error and just saying, how could we do refurbishment? Would it make sense to have us be able to do reuse here? What would it have to take if we were to try to extend product lifetime? As I say in the episode that I did, the solo cast episode I did in 2020 about circular entrepreneurs ask, what if? What if I could slow down how products are used in society? What if I could close material loops? What would that look like? What if I did this? So that's number 3. This third step to taking action is trying out different strategies, asking what if. And the fourth strategy to taking action for a circular economy is checking for outcomes. I think that often this gets overlooked, this gets forgotten, but I think that it is the most important for 2 reasons. So the first reason is you need to quantify the outcomes. You need to find how your solution is better than other solutions out there. And this is really the proof for circular economy. This is where you can go to the company that you have this idea for or the customer and say, you should choose my solution. Not because it's circular, but because it actually has a tangible benefit for the person who is going to use it. And this is actually something that Virginia of Green Gorilla and I talked about in her episode when she came on the podcast, episode 60. We talk about trying to find the benefit. Yes, we circular economy enthusiasts have circular economy as this end goal. But for many other people, that's not what the end goal is. They're looking for ways to make it tangible to them. They're looking for, how does this fulfill my needs and what is the benefit for me? So checking for outcomes allows you to actually make your solution happen and implement circular economy. And the second reason why you should check for outcomes is that you need to be sure that your solution is beneficial from an environmental perspective, if that's what you're going for. Many times people, I find, make the mistake that they think that circular is automatically more sustainable. But it's clear from some of the research that I've been doing, as well as others, that it's not always the case that circular solutions, especially circular business models, end up with environmental savings, or, for example, reduced resource consumption. Many of the business models that I've been seeing, you know, advertised as circular are things like come back and return your product, like your t-shirt, to our store, and we'll give you a 15% discount and we'll recycle the t-shirt. And in some cases, maybe, for example, that actually might increase consumption because you're trying to encourage people to come back to your store and dispose of a perfectly good t-shirt and get a new one at a discount. So maybe that could actually be, of course, increase in consumption, which leads to increased resource consumption if that t-shirt's not made from reused materials, the new t-shirt. So this is why it's important to check for outcomes, to find out if there are actually, you know, environmental benefits and if there's economic benefits. So in the case of the Ocean Street experiment that Ashley and her sister did, they found that they were able to cut costs with implementing the circular strategies that they proposed. It improved the customer experience to the street, and it also improved the cleanliness and the environment of the area. And there was sort of social capital that the organizations and businesses in the area built because they came together really for the first time and started working together, not just as separate entities, but really as one cohesive ecosystem. So don't forget to think about the outcomes of your solution, because not only will it maybe help you be able to implement it, it will also be able to bring lots of different stakeholders on board if you're able to tell the concrete benefits to the various stakeholders. So don't overlook checking for outcomes, because it actually might be the most important way to help you go forward in your implementation of circular economy, because you're able to say exactly what is expected from your solution. So those were the four steps. To recap, the four steps to taking action towards a circular economy were: one, acknowledge what you already know and think about how you could use it. Two, commit to a small scope. Three, try out different circular economy strategies. And four, check for outcomes. I want to leave you with a quote I heard in the end of 2020 from Freek van Eyck, who was the director of the Holland Circular Hotspot. And he said, "Circular economy is 20% technical, 80% social." I would have to agree with Freek that the social level, the human level, is the most important aspect of building a circular economy. And I find that it's often the part that's most overlooked. I wonder why that is, because we are seeing that when it comes to implementing circular economy, it starts with people. It starts with people having an idea, having a connection. One of my friends, Dr. Phil Brown, and his colleagues at TU Delft, they actually investigated how circular initiatives started in Dutch companies. And in their research, they found that it was mainly because of connections. Connections at the human level. So-and-so met so-and-so, or knew this person, and they just were at a conference, they started talking, they started just finding out that they shared similar challenges, and they had this kind of business matchmaking, and they started just saying, oh, why don't we implement this pilot here? Why don't we go do that? Oh, we can go do this. And it was just from learning by doing that these different initiatives came about in these companies. So I fully agree with Frank when he says that it's 80% social and 20% technical, because at the human level, it starts with connection. And I see that from interviewing all of the people on the podcast and meeting with you, connecting with you, talking to you, learning from you. It gives me more drive to do the podcast, and I'm very happy to be able to celebrate this milestone with you. So thank you again for joining me on the Getting in the Loop podcast and for being here for the past 2 years. I'm going to leave you with this quote from Ashley Morris. You can't do it all, and you can't do it alone. And that's exactly why we're here on the podcast, connecting with each other. I hope that you enjoyed this solo cast on the 4 steps to taking action towards a circular economy. If you think that you agree with me, or if there is another step that you would add, tell me in a voice message, and maybe you will appear on the next Getting in the Loop podcast episode. Head over to the show notes to find out how to leave a message. You can also leave a message on the Getting in the Loop LinkedIn page. Just head over to LinkedIn and search for Getting in the Loop podcast.